Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Jason, and I support Gen X Grown Up on Patreon. You should do the same, because the world just needs more GXG to make it a better place. Just go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon to donate to the cause.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up podcast listeners, to this backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown Up podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, is Mo.
Hey, everybody.
And, of course, George is here.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
In early 1966, a campy, dynamic duo hit our TV screens, and it changed superhero media forever. Adam West, Burt Ward, and a parade of celebrity guest stars brought a comic book to life in a way we'd never seen before. In this episode, we're taking the Batmobile on a cruise through Gotham as we remember the 1966 ABC television series Batman. No, 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 no.
I was trying not to do that.
Right. It's all you could do to not start humming the Batman theme. Don't fight it. It's time to finally let it go. This is the appropriate time to do that finally. We're there.
Yeah. There you go. And since it only has one word in the whole song, it's easy.
Right.
I know the lyrics. I can sing along. It's so easy. Before we get into that, and that's going to be fun, it's time for some fourth listener email, one of my favorite parts of the show. It feels like we've been talking a lot about Mike Coe, our recent new supporter, but he wrote into us. Actually, just before he became a Patreon supporter, he dropped us an email, and our email this episode, our fourth listener, is, in fact, Mike Coe. Subject line of his email is, "Greetings." Nice and generic. And George, you're gonna like this one because he's defending you. How about that?
Those are the best emails ever.
Let's move on.
Can we skip it? Just get to Batman? Luckily, those sorts of emails are delightfully rare, so we don't have to do very many.
Puss bucket, son of a...
Here's what Mike Coe said. "Hello, Gen X grown-ups. Long-time lurker, first-time caller. I have been listening to your guys' podcast on iHeartRadio for quite a while now, but decided it was time to jump in and join and participate and support," all of which he's done, by the way, in spades. Thanks, Mike.
Oh, fantastic. Wow.
"Now that I have, I don't know why I didn't earlier. Anyways, I continue going back to listen to past podcasts that I hadn't heard."
Yeah,
that's, you know, that's the neat thing. If it's new to you, it's new, right? There's tons of stuff in the back catalog that you'd be surprised.
And there's a couple hundred for you to go back and find.
Yeah.
So
no kidding.
There's plenty out there.
If you ever miss us, there's plenty of recordings of us being fools. No shortage. Mike goes on to say, "Now it seems many like to be on the Attack George bandwagon, on the Roadside Attractions Backtrack podcast." Wow, that's a deep cut. That's going back a ways. "Mo mentioned the haunted Remington house, and John quickly jumps in to back Mo up." I remember that.
Yes.
"George wisely didn't comment as the house you're referring to is actually the Winchester house in San Francisco." Okay, so here's the question. Did George know better and just let us flounder, or did he just not say anything because he didn't know better?
George loves correcting us, so I don't think it's the first one.
That's a good point. I think if he knew the difference, he would have jumped in.
You know, considering how old the podcast is, I really don't have a memory of that exact moment.
Oh, he's going to plead ignorance.
I know that it's the Winchester house, but it's likely that I probably just didn't pick up on it at the time.
Okay. Well, see, that's very magnanimous. He could have thrown us under the bus, Mo.
Yeah, he could have easily.
I could have. I just let you fools look dumb. That's We can do that on our own. We don't need your help, George. Yeah. We can look like fools with no drink.
That's what I keep saying.
I can't believe it. Did we call it we must have called it the Remington House. I've not listened to that in forever.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that one forever.
They're both gun manufacturers, so.
Partial credit. Exactly right.
Yeah. I think so.
Thank you, Mike. He wraps it up by saying, "Guys, keep up the great work. And remember, for every podcast you make, there's a fourth listener and beyond." Ah. Fourthly, yours, Mike.
Cool. Very cool. Thanks, Mike.
Hey, thanks again, Mike, for writing in. We love it every time the fourth listener writes in. Hey, if you're you're listening and would like your email featured here on the show, it's so easy. Just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We read every single one, and most of them, like Mike's, make the show. All right, guys, it is time to get in to some Batman 66 right after this break. Stick around. Over the past few weeks, we've been trying out Factor Meals and their meals that come straight to your door. They deliver them to you in the mail. They drop on the front door in this freezer pack. And it's a great way to eat stress-free. And this spring, you can get delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. And here's the cool thing, as we've all found out. You throw them in the microwave for 2 minutes, and they're ready to eat and not even requiring cleanup.
And if you can't find something on their menu that you like, then you're just way too picky.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have over 35 options. Mm. You know, they have things like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie, and we even tried the vegetarian one, which was really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just the regular meals, but they've also got all these add-on packs, which I really love. These are right. things like, you know, breakfast or on-the-go lunches or little snacks, even like beverages that want to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So really, I mean, like they say on their site, what are you waiting for? And they're not kidding. You can get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals by heading over to Factor.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Are you looking for good gourmet meals? Try the meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking.
We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for lowest carbon footprint meals.
So head to factormeals.com/GenX50 and use code GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code GenX50 at factormeals.com/GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show too. It helps more than you know.
Week after week, the Cape Crusader copes with the tricky traps of vicious villains. Will the time arrive when the Cape crime fighters come too close to the jaws of death?
Holy metronome, what a fate! Punched in the player piano rolls.
Watch Batman in Color on ABC.
Sing the song. Now's your chance, George. Yeah. Sing.
I don't want to sing the song. It's one of those earworms that never goes away for like a week
and
a half.
I will be whistling this all day long and singing Batman. I know, right? Wow, what a show. So Batman 66, as it's often nicknamed, it was just called Batman.
Yeah, there was no 66 back then.
But there's been so many iterations since that now it's nicknamed Batman 66. Premiered on ABC Wednesday, January 12th, 1966.
I wonder if that was a good time slot on a Wednesday. And was it an evening or was it an afternoon?
7:30 in the evening. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a primetime show.
Yeah, primetime. That's right. Yep. So we'd never seen anything quite like this. We had seen Superman. It had a series, but it was super straight laid.
Oh, yeah. Very serious.
This came out
serious.
Of the very mod kind of hippie era of the 60s. And it was so deliciously campy and bright, garish colors. It was stuff that I know I had never seen before and maybe nothing quite like it since.
It reminded me a lot of what was that variety show that came on where the people popped out of doors and stuff? Smothers Brothers, maybe? Or
Laugh-In.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh,
it
yeah.
Reminded
same
me
kind
of
sensibilities.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was that same kind of like I just expected cameras zoom in and out stuff with people dancing, and Austin right. Powers peeks his head in from the side, maybe.
You bet your bippy, right? Something crazy like that's happening on it. Well, it aired on ABC. They were considering developing shows based on other comic book characters because it's like, well, hey, Superman did okay back in the day in black and white. We're going to do something new. They settled on Batman because Superman and Dick Tracy, which were their first choices, they were not available. They couldn't get the rights. Yeah. So they just kind of went, eh, all right, I guess we'll do Batman, whatever.
Who's our third choice? Batman. There we go.
Yeah, maybe fourth or fifth. Who knows? And they looked around. Really? It was the last thing that they could snatch up.
I'm surprised that, A, nobody had tried to do a Batman show previously. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Superman, why that one was one of the first ones, because he's Superman. That's the hero Truth, that Justice, everybody America knows, yeah. right? You're playing to the biggest audience was Superman, but right. Batman was a really close second. Even back in the 50s and 60s, his comic book was super popular. I'm very surprised.
It had been around for a quarter century at the time, right? Yeah. Why would nobody tried it yet? You know, it's crazy.
Maybe they thought it was too dark. I mean, his parents get killed and, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, maybe just they would, because they were pretty apple pie vanilla kind of stuff back then.
I mean, Superman was kind of dark too. His whole planet had blown up, but.
That's even worse than your parents getting shot.
Yeah, but those are aliens. You know,
right. My parents, everyone my parents ever knew. Oh, he's an alien. It doesn't. Wow. Wow. Way to be earthist, Mo. Goodness.
Is that a new thing now?
It is.
I just
apparently.
Made it up, right? ABC hired producer William Dozier, who was actually a very tenured producer in television. He had done a lot of stuff before. He had never read a Batman comic book until he got involved in this.
That explains a lot, actually.
Well,
interestingly so. So was it a really different slant on the Batman, which you said, George, was very dark, and this was very bright and very...
It was garish almost.
Yes. I want to say cartoony.
A little bit. Oh, yeah.
It was. I think cartoon was cartoony.
You know what I mean? Cartoony, not like comics, more like cartoons, like a like a slapsticky kind of
like
stuff.
Like a Hanna-Barbera thing. Or
right.
It was comic-y, but not in comic book form, although very similar to comic books of the day, but more comic strip form, like what you might expect to see in the paper.
Mm-hmm. This was initially planned to be a movie about Batman that was going to launch a series. That was the idea.
Okay.
So they were going to air it in mid-66, and then Batman would launch in the fall of 66 when the new TV shows came out. However, ABC, they were not doing great. Their primetime shows were all floundering and they were getting crappy ratings. And so they told Dozier, I said, this is like, hey, let's, instead of doing this movie, let's kick the thing off right away. So they aired it in January of 1966 as a mid-season replacement. Like, you're ready? Let's just start the series.
Wow.
Got nothing to lose.
Kind of hit the ground running. They had to get going. That's right.
I can't imagine.
No, you're planning for a movie in mid-year and they're like, let's just get going 6 months ahead of time. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Well, and especially back then, everything was kind of still being developed in television. Like, I know television had been around for a long time, but TV series and developing new stuff and everything, it was still kind of, you know, like playing it off the cuff almost. And to have that decision thrown at you 6 months earlier. Whew.
And Batman isn't a, hey, a couple guys talking at a cafe. I mean, there are props and sets and costumes and vehicles and things you had to get going. They invested a ton of money into it.
Did I hear right that it received like some terrible like reviews early on, or like the customer response where it was
still
terrible
gets
or something?
Terrible reviews, even now.
But nobody cares now, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it. Like, I would be shocked if they didn't have a really hard time lining up advertising spots for that show.
Mm-hmm.
Because the last thing that had been on the air, I don't remember, I think was probably the Dick Tracy series.
Well,
maybe.
You say tough selling advertising. You're saying before it aired. Once it started.
Once it started, though, I mean, I would imagine as a sponsor back then in 66, that thing would have looked a little too provocative to associate my brand with.
Well, eyeballs are eyeballs. When that started, picking up steam.
Well, once it started drawing in millions and millions, then I'm reevaluating as an advertiser.
Yeah. We don't care about our image now.
Yeah, they said it got the worst test audience scores in the history of ABC.
Wow. That's what I was thinking of. Okay. Worst test audience scores.
But they went ahead and aired it because, like I said, they'd invested so much money in it, it was too late to scrap.
You got to get something out of it.
They needed something for mid-season replacement. They had already moved up the schedule. They're like, nobody's going to like it. Let's just put it on the air, get it over with. But oh no, it was lightning in a bottle. Turns out.
You wonder then too, because it got the worst audience test scores, did they know how to pick the audience for the show for those tests?
What was the audience, right? Was it stuffy old, like, I say, this is not television. This is, right? Bring in some kids or comic book fans or, you know, what is
it? It had to be kids. Aiming at? This had to be a kids aimed show the way it came off, right? Because we all watched it, and we're going to talk about that in a little while, but it wasn't something my father said, hey, Batman's on. No.
Yeah.
That wasn't, you know.
No, my father was like, oh, I see you're watching Batman again. When is that over?
Right.
It was funny how back then it's like we put too much money in it. You know, like I guess the concept of sunk cost didn't really matter to them. But today it's like they could throw millions like, oh, it sucks, cancel it. You know,
they can cut bait now a lot faster because they have a lot more options for content now.
Yeah,
I think
so they do.
The only thing they had in the pipe. They're like, that's the only thing we got.
And you're only three networks back then, too. So
there's not these production houses.
Competition was concentrated, right? Mm-hmm. And they were big companies, so they could do pretty much whatever they wanted. And they, I don't think they had a lot of ideas being pitched then. Television was still, it wasn't new, but it was still,
it was in its infancy. It was like a teenager, right? It was just getting going. It got its legs. It knew what it was doing, but it was still figuring out what works and what doesn't. Yeah. Well, we mentioned it's kind of lightning in the bottle, and I think a lot of that is due to the casting. Now, we'd mentioned at the beginning, Adam West and Burt Ward, and a lot of celebrity guest stars,
but let's
focus right now on the reason that it was such a hit. I want to start with the big two, I think, that you think about, the dynamic duo. Adam West, first of all, Bruce Wayne and Batman.
I mean, I don't know, remember all the actors that were in television and film back then. Of course, film didn't cross over to TV or whatnot. I know that was a big taboo back then, but I still, to this day, I can't see anybody else in the Batman 66 role other than Adam West. He had the deep baritone voice, the serious attitude, but still was like almost like he would break the fourth wall, but wouldn't type of attitude. He was perfect.
You think he has such a serious demeanor about him that it made it more ridiculous? You know?
It did. It was almost like he was serious and then he went over serious, which made it funny.
Right.
It was so serious.
You've seen interviews with him since then where he said, now I don't know if it's true, but he said that was a conscious decision to try and play it so serious that it was going to be slightly funny.
And he always had that glint in his eye, you know, like he's, and you're right, he's not breaking the fourth wall, but he's almost winking at me. He's like, you know how ridiculous this is, don't you? We're doing it. And he just played it straight.
Yeah.
You see this dumbass stretch pants costume I'm wearing.
Yeah. Right. Yep. And he wore it in no muscle suit, no nothing. That was just him. You know, he's like a nice slender guy and he's not like he's superhero physique.
Yeah. Like pipe cleaners for arms, you know, no thigh muscles whatsoever. The man couldn't jump to save his life.
But he was our Batman.
He would kick all those guys' asses. We're going to talk about the guest stars later on and everything. And it's easy to understand why, because the people he cast as the villains were just as awkward and not physically present.
Wonderfully so. That's right. Like, these shouldn't be the stars of your show, but by God, they are. And they were great, right?
Not in these roles. Not as we know superhero movies and TV shows today.
Many of them celebrities in their own right, but they're not supervillains, right? So producer William Dozier cast West as Bruce Wayne and Batman, his alter ego, partly after seeing West perform as a James Bond-like spy in a Nestle Quick commercial.
That tracks.
Oh, my God.
That totally tracks.
Really?
To me,
yes.
It does.
He was kind of acting like a super spy. Like he was smuggling this Nestle Quick or whatever. It was just a black and white ad.
I mean, just with that voice, the way he carries himself, I can see that.
Right. It's like, oh, he gets it. He can pull off the thing that I see, right?
Right.
It's like the guy who does the M&M's commercials at the beginning of movies who passes them the top secret file.
Yeah.
Right. That he's sitting on the park bench. It's like that guy getting cast as the next James Bond.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. But because he's like, we saw what you did in the M&M spot.
Right.
That's perfect.
You could pull off that trench coat. You're good.
You play Cloak and Dagger. Great.
That trench coat fits you like a glove.
The way you have it up around your neck is perfect. Now, unlike Robin, who we'll talk about in a second, had a lot of people vying for the role, Dozier only had two people in mind for the role of Batman or Bruce Wayne. And that was Adam West, who ultimately got the role. And the other was Lyle Wagner.
Oh, wow. He wanted to be like Steve Trevor in that Wonder Woman series.
That's right. He was Steve Trevor. Absolutely.
So he stuck with the superhero television genre, it sounds
like. Yeah, really.
He did.
I don't get Batman. Damn it, I'm getting Wonder Woman.
I'm getting Wonder Woman.
Okay, given the choice.
Well, true.
I think he made the smarter choice.
Now, I don't know if you've seen it, but there is some test footage of the pilot episode with Lyle Wagner as Bruce Wayne.
Oh, really? Is there? No, I haven't seen
there
it.
There is.
I have not seen
it. Yeah, you can see. Now, it's interesting. He's a similar type of looking guy. He's a handsome kind of movie star looking guy. He's tall and slim, like you talked about. He's very dignified. That's, you know, jawline is nice. The thing, if you watch the test footage, though, he doesn't go, like we just talked about, over the top serious. He plays it like a regular show, a regular movie. He's not in a comic book. Mm-hmm. And the thing I watched, the guy said he could have done it, but he couldn't have done it the way that Adam West did it.
True.
Well, like, I never thought Adam West was the handsome leading man, though. He never came across that way to me. I know he did the Bruce Wayne parts, and that's when mm-hmm. you would see his face and he would have the hair done and all that.
Yeah.
But he never came across to me in my memory as being that handsome Sean Connery, James Bond, you know, leading man, butch type of guy. He, I don't know. He just came across as a goof to me.
Well, he was already an established actor.
Well, yeah, he had done Nestle Quick commercials. Of course he was established.
He had done lots of stuff. Yeah. I always thought he was a handsome fellow. I thought he was dapper. Yeah. You know?
He had classic looks, I thought, like kind of 1950s yeah. well, sort
you,
of.
You see him in other stuff before and after, and you're like, well, now all you see is like, oh, that's Batman doing something else. But mm-hmm. So the other one I mentioned, Burt Ward, the boy
Dick
wonder.
Grayson.
Oh, yeah.
The yep. second part of the dynamic duo. Yep. Dick Grayson and Robin.
Holy, whatever, Batman.
He had all the holy lines.
Holy
he?
Catfish Batman.
Can we talk about that? Yeah, holy whatever Batman. Yeah. I didn't save it. I looked somewhere. He had holy something. There were hundreds of times he had used that across the series.
Oh, I believe
it. There was all these different things.
It was the pun punchline throughout the entire comedy mm-hmm. dialogue yep. of the show.
Whatever it is, right. If it's a shark, holy shark bite Batman. Holy, yeah. right. holy Christmas present Batman. Whatever it was holy that Batman.
Yep. Holy Jacques Cousteau, yeah.
Right.
Holy Jacques Cousteau. Unlike West, more than 1,100 people auditioned.
Holy
for that
cow. Oof. That's, yeah. that's a huge casting call.
That
wow.
was tight. In that Lyle Wagner footage I told you, it's some other guy doing it. Nobody you recognize that I recognize, just some other young actor doing it. But ultimately, Dozier cast Ward because he said, the reason we selected you was in our minds, forgetting television, if there really was a Robin, you would be it. We knew it the minute you came in.
Hmm.
That's got to be flattering as an actor to go, you are the character, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like he didn't really have to audition that hard. Yeah. Sounds like you walked in, we saw you in those tight little green pants, and we said, that's our Robin.
That's our guy. I know. It's not like you said, oh, you're our Citizen Kane. Nobody else right. can play that role but you.
Nobody else you're can say holy catfish Batman except for you.
Right. Here's what we'd like you to read. It's 40 different holy things. Holy this, yeah. holy that, holy whatever.
This is weird. Yeah.
Perfect. So, you're cast. You're hired.
Like if he got through more than four of the holies without breaking a sweat and without laughing out loud, yeah. then like he was up. Robin. Nope.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's your man. He's gone on to do a lot of stuff. He didn't do a lot of acting after Batman, but he went on to become a philanthropist. He's like a dog rescue guy. He takes care of animals that don't have homes. He said he went from being the boy wonder to the dog wonder or something, he once said in an interview, because he just took that money and his fame and he invested it in taking care of animals. Became a big wow. philanthropist in that way. Oh, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Nice guy.
Oh, before we leave this section, I mean, we got to talk about the theme song.
Okay. Yeah.
That theme song was, again. I mean, come on.
No.
I mean, I was trying to forget the theme song, but you brought it back up, so thanks.
I can't. It's, you can't.
It's too late now.
Do you know that was a top 40 hit, and it won a Grammy Award?
A really? Grammy Award?
Yeah.
No kidding.
For best instrumental theme.
Huh. Well, not for the lyrics, that's for sure.
I know. It definitely does not have lyrics. I'm trying to imagine that playing on the radio. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it just seems like a weird thing to be putting on the radio for a top 40.
Yeah, because it doesn't hold up to something like Greatest American Hero. That was a theme that could play on the radio.
It's not a pop song. Yeah. It's purely a TV theme.
Yeah.
La 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 la
or
la
like
la
Friends,
la la la.
You know, their theme song. You could see that being played on the radio. It was, you know, but yeah.
Well, Star Wars theme did play on the radio a lot. I remember that one playing a lot when
it
first came out. Yeah.
Did it? Really?
Oh, Star Wars theme? Oh, yeah.
I guess people just nuts about Star Wars. Yeah. Fine, let's listen to the music.
Yeah. I mean, that was its own phenomenon, and that probably played more from the movie being popular. This was Batman that popular?
That song, man, that's such like earworm.
You know, at the time, I don't know that it was knocking it out of the park, but it was certainly popular. But why did the song get so popular? I don't know. It's not an inspired song. It feels like somebody just knocked it off in an afternoon. You know?
I'm just trying to figure out why somebody decided to play it on the radio in the first place. Like, how did he get submitted to the Grammys?
Maybe it's just it was so weird and out there. And the guy who actually wrote the theme, Neil Hefti, he actually wrote the theme for the Odd Couple series as well.
That's the exact same theme. I can see that.
I kind of hear that. Yeah, I can see that. Oh, great. Now I have two songs in my head. Thanks, George.
Oh, he never returned.
Payback.
Before we move into talking about those guest stars that we had alluded to, I want to quickly run around the table with a quick question, as we often do. So this was the very leading edge of Gen X. This came out in 66, which is like this Gen X typically starts around 65. Like, this was the bleeding edge. We were all quite young. Even the old Grandpa Mo, you were quite young.
Yep.
To have watched this in first run would have been tough.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I want to ask you, what do you remember? What is your memory? How do you think of Batman? How did you watch it or whatever? George, I want to start with you. Kind of what's your connection to it?
I don't know. You asked like seven different questions there. So let me figure out which one
I'm going to pick one. Pick one.
I mean, for me, it was obviously reruns after school in the afternoons. That's what I remember the most about watching Batman. It wouldn't have been, if it had been on during primetime, I wouldn't have been allowed to watch it because we only had the one TV and my dad controlled it when he got home. Mm-hmm. But I just have more impressionistic memories of it rather than imperialistic data. Like we talked about before the podcast started recording, John, Star Trek. I can name episode names. I can remember people,
actors,
specifically
plots,
in certain things.
Oh, yeah.
The
planets.
Whole nine yards. Production value. Trivia, whatever. With Batman, it's I remember fight scenes, mm-hmm. and I remember wall walking, and I remember people popping out of windows that I didn't know who the fuck they were or why they were popping out of windows in the first place. But I think I remembered more than anything the villains. And I know we have a segment where we're going to talk a lot about the villains.
Yep,
so I think
that's
what I remember the most.
The bad guys?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That makes sense.
So just 2 years older than you, so I was born in 69, and so while I could have watched it in first run as a toddler, I didn't, of course. Like you, it was on every day after school. You know, mm-hmm. you come home and there were cartoons and stuff. But then kind of it was almost that segue between the cartoons mm-hmm. in the early afternoon and before you got in like news time. It'd be like, you know, 4:30 or 5, this would be on. And it was like the last thing I watched before my parents took over the TV, usually in the afternoon. And like you, I can't remember probably specific plot lines or stories. It's the feeling of the show. Like you just show me 1 second, like you flash a second of the show and you recognize it right away. And when I think of it, I think of home after school, having a peanut butter sandwich, gonna do my homework later. But first, this is the thing I can use to procrastinate and really enjoy. It was just for me. Turns out I didn't know it was just for everybody. It was a primetime show, but it felt like it was just for kids. And yeah, the way that Adam West kind of nodded and winked at you, like you were kind of in on the joke, made me feel like it was mine. But yeah, I don't see it as a thing. It's not a touchstone for me, but it's certainly a factor of my childhood growing up that was always present as long as I can remember. Yeah. Now, Mo, being a little bit older, the oldest of the three of us, how do you remember Batman?
Yeah, actually, I remember quite a bit because like you said, John, it's like it came on like that cusp time between cartoons and evening TV. It was like right like 4:30, it's a 4:35 time frame somewhere in there. But it was on every day, Channel 11, WPIX in New York. It's funny because I remember thinking that this was like an original show. I had no idea it was reruns.
All reruns, yeah.
We didn't know the difference. Yeah, I didn't know the difference. I'm like, it's always been on here, you know. Matter of fact, I would probably have a hard time picturing my dad watching it like on primetime TV or something because it seemed like it was made for me.
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, some of the jokes were so odd that I probably didn't get them because they're just so like just weird. But for the most part, though, I mean, seeing the fight scenes with the bing, bam, you know, all that stuff, I mean, it was awesome. So I definitely remember watching it. It was like, it was a pretty much a staple for after school.
I think it's fair to say none of us are Batman historical experts, but we all had it as part of the bedrock of our Gen X experience.
We do have one member of the podcast team that is a historical expert on Batman 66, though.
Oh, we do?
Yeah. His name is Google. And we use the crap out of him whole bunch of this stuff.
He's a fantastic assistant.
What was it like to be there for historical sports moments and unforgettable performances? To be behind the scenes? On PressBox Access, you'll hear from me, Todd Jones, and other sports writers about their experiences with the greatest athletes, coaches, and sports events of the past half century. We'll share some stories behind the stories, some big, some small, and some we've only told each other. Let us buy you a round on PressBox Access.
You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
You're one of those who just can't get enough of Batman. Help is here.
I order you to surrender.
I hope this doesn't depress you.
There. Feel better? It's only temporary relief, we know. But the next episode is just a few bat hours away.
Gentlemen, we just ended that last segment admitting that we are not deep dive experts on Batman 66. Mm-hmm. We just have our childhood memories of watching that show. And it showed because we left somebody out that should have been in that initial segment.
Oh, no. Wait, who did we miss? There's only Batman, Robin. Who else?
Well, we talked about the big two. There should have been the big three, because the third star of that damn TV show, as far as I'm concerned, was the Batmobile.
Oh, yeah.
One of the most iconic vehicles of television history.
Yeah, totally impractical, but it was great.
On behalf of Gen X Grown Up, I apologize to the Bat.
Yeah, you're right.
That was a total oversight.
Yeah, that was a great car.
So, you know, our fourth research assistant, Google, he told us that this Batmobile was designed by George Barris. I did know this, that it was an experimental 1955 Lincoln called the Futura. I remember that from other documentary stuff that I've watched in the past. But that Batmobile, to this day, it's kind of like we talked about in the Ghostbusters episode.
Yeah.
If you got one prop from that movie, you want the Ecto-1.
Right. At the Ecto, right?
Right. In this one, if you get a prop from Batman 66, it's the Batmobile. That's what you want.
It has to be. It has to be.
You know, a figurine of Batman in his gray and blue, or Robin in his green, yellow, and red. I mean, those are okay. But it's okay. a Batmobile on a shelf with lights.
That's some sweet stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The little red siren at the top, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just like the bubble windows.
The bubble windows and the fins off the back. All the tails.
The red pinstriping, not even pinstriping, like fat striping all the way around it, accenting those curves and lines.
Did you have the little Batmobile car that had like it shot the little rockets out the back?
No.
Like right above the seat?
I didn't have any Batmobile toys. That's why I'm sad.
Oh my God. I still wish I had it.
That's why I've been so grumpy my entire adult life, because I didn't have a Batmobile toy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like there's three pipes behind it where they sit. You could shoot out stuff out of them.
Like little spring-loaded rockets in there?
Yeah. And you always lost it.
That could not have lasted long on the market.
Yeah.
There had to be like 400 kids choked to death on those pretty quick.
Oh, yeah, back before anyone cared. He took out an eye, you know?
Well, this is pre-Jarts, remember. Before Jarts, you could have things that were dangerous. It was
We all survived somehow.
Just as an aside, though, the Batmobile, obviously, that's not the only vehicle associated with Batman 66, both the TV show. Later on, we're going to mention the movie. There was the Batcopter. There was a Bat boat.
Yep.
I vaguely remember a Bat jetpack, I think, or something. I mean, there was just ridiculous amounts of everything that they needed. There was a Bat boomerang. There was a Bat this. There was a Bat that. It was all Bat. And all of them were
and
funny
it all fit
hell.
On a damn utility belt somehow. It was all in those little pouches. Where'd that come from? Oh, it was on my belt. Really? It's a freaking horse saddle. Where'd you get that? Oh, no, it's a Bat saddle. They always had something.
Oh, yeah. I remember the Bat cycle, like when they went up to the helicopter.
The Bat cycle,
It split into two, like the sidecar split off, so they didn't have to walk around the helicopter to get in.
Of course it had to split in two. Yes. That was essential for any chase.
Well, of course. How was he going to do it?
I mean, so in all kidding aside, obviously, you know, we talked about the big two, now the big three. That's not what made Batman for me. What made Batman for me were the villains.
You said,
I love the villains. Yep. And my favorite villain of all time, my favorite actor in that series, Burgess Meredith as the Penguin.
Yeah.
It's like the song. We have to
With the cigarette holder, you know.
Oh, God. And the top hat and the little crouch that he would do to walk around and everything.
The monocle.
Yes, the monocle. Oh, my God. Yes. Even after the Batman movie started coming out with Michael Keaton and we had Danny DeVito play an incredible Penguin.
Yeah.
He still wasn't my Penguin. Burgess Meredith is my Penguin.
And I can see inspiration of Burgess Meredith in DeVito's portrayal as the Penguin too.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
No, it looked very different. It behaved different. But I mean, the mannerisms and kind of the hunch a little bit. Oh, yeah. Burgess Meredith was.
Yeah.
Oh, he was great. Yeah. Can't stop doing it.
And as an actor, too, we're going to talk about all of the people who were villains in this movie were huge actors and names in their own right.
They're not nobodies.
Yeah.
How did they do that?
Yeah, these are not like minor actors even. I mean, these are like A-list people.
No, there's one or two of them that are A-list film actors.
Yeah.
And I mentioned it earlier. Film actors didn't transition into TV because it was taboo back then to go
unless
from
it was
film
Batman,
to TV.
Apparently.
Or they offered them so much money.
If you went from film to TV, your career was over. You were done.
Yeah, like you didn't have to transition like today. People flip back and forth all the time, which back then,
Well,
you're not going to talk about Batman without talking about the Joker.
Oh, yeah.
And Batman 66's Joker, Cesar Romero, in that white face paint.
Yeah, another one.
Oh, my, what a talent. And I don't think at that point, at least in the Batman 66, the Joker wasn't the main bad guy. It was a whole rogues gallery of guys you would deal with. But the Joker, as played by Cesar Romero, he had the menace, even though it was kind of tongue-in-cheek menace, and it was fun. He was such a big movie star, though, that... He refused to shave his mustache. So it was okay on old grainy TVs, but you watch now in the transfers, he has his mustache. It's just painted white.
He's just painted over it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just painted over it. Yeah.
I never noticed
that.
They
just spackled the paint on top of it.
Right.
Trying to hide
never
it.
Thought about it. He didn't even like try to like glue it down. It's just, he's just, there's a white mustache on with his white face paint.
Well, because you know, he went on set that day and they said, okay, Caesar, we've got to shave your mustache for the Joker.
The hell we are.
Nah, just paint over it. I'm Caesar Romero.
He's like, no, we're not.
And you know that show, they couldn't have forced him to do it.
Oh.
They didn't have the clout that he did at that time.
Yeah, they felt so grateful he was just there, you know, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. But he's still, like, I'm going to keep going back to it. To me, he wasn't as iconic as Penguin in the series. Now, the one who kind of was, and there's two of them who played the role, was the Riddler. Riddler was very close to Penguin in my eyes for the villains.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I want to ask you two, which Riddler was your Riddler? Was Frank Gorshin your Riddler, or was John Astin your Riddler? Because they were two completely different guys.
I'm going to go John Astin just because he was on Adam's Family. So
okay.
Well, we can even it out then, because Frank Gorshin by far was the Riddler I liked the most.
Yeah, I'm going to swing vote it over to Frank Gorshin, because spandex Riddler,
we
way
win.
Better than suit Riddler.
I have to go watch it again, to be honest. It's been a while. So
Gorshin would do that whole creepy crawly thing that, like, even what's that evil character in Dora the Explorer? The swipery?
Oh, yeah.
Swiping.
Yeah. That's the Riddler. I don't give a shit what anybody calls
him. He did
that's
this like creepy spider-like movements, and he was all like he
but
was a mime
Astin
or
didn't
something,
do it.
Right?
Astin was a businessman kind of character.
Yeah, more straight-laced. Yeah. Yep.
Do you remember? Which was a viable Riddler, don't get me wrong, but Frank Gorshin knocked it out of the park. I mean, to this day, if I were to go to a convention and want to get a Riddler autograph, it's going to be Frank Gorshin.
One thing I remember is like the Riddler's riddles were just ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Even as a kid, I'm like, I don't get it. Because here's, I found one actually. He says, what does a turkey do when it flies upside down? He gobbles up.
That's right, Robin. Of course, it's going to be the parade where everybody's eating turkey. What are
balloon?
How did you make that connection?
Be a bomb at the parade because it's up and it's a turkey.
Here's my favorite one. What weighs 6 ounces, sits in a tree, and is very dangerous? A sparrow with a machine gun. I'm sorry.
Okay, Batman, there'll be a sniper in the elm tree at the president's speech.
Holy bird sniper, Batman.
The funniest thing is, like, you see all the characters around them, like Chief O'Hara and all those guys are like, of course, you know, I mean, they're like,
naturally.
It makes perfect sense.
Good thinking, Batman.
Well, no, but
of
they
course,
couldn't say of course or naturally until Batman came up with it.
Once
that was
he
part
said
of
it.
The
That's
story, right?
Yep.
Batman
that was
had
thing.
To be the one to figure it out. Nobody else could. God. Crazy.
Some other great stars. I loved Vincent Price.
Yeah.
Shaved his head for Egghead. Well, actually, he didn't shave his head. It was a bald cap. But yes, he was a bald Vincent Price.
Yes. He might have been one of the biggest names at the time to be on the series. I mean,
yeah,
you got to think who Vincent Price was in the 60s.
He was a movie star. Solid
right.
movie
yeah.
star.
Some of the other guys are comedians or stand-up comics or singers or whatnot, but Vincent Price, legendary horror movie star at that point.
Yeah. In the one episode I remember seeing Vincent Price in as Egghead, I loved it was all egg puns.
Oh,
like everything he said was related.
His name is Egghead.
Excellent.
It was wonderful. Of course, it was great.
Exactly.
Eggs.
So. Come this way, Batman, while I scramble Robin. Robin,
right. You know? It's all Will Batman and Robin be over easy? Right. It's going to be crazy egg puns constantly. You said comics, Milton Berle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember seeing him, but he played Louis the Lilac.
I think he was only like in one episode. He was a one and done kind of thing. But still, though, it's pretty amazing.
But it was Milton freaking Berle.
I know.
you can see Milton Berle being on Batman 66. Like, even if you don't remember the episode, if somebody tells you Milton Berle was on Batman 66, you automatically go, oh, of course he was. He's made for that show.
Why wouldn't he be? Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you had that question earlier, so here I'm going to throw this new one at you.
All right.
Uh-oh.
Who is your Catwoman?
Oh, no.
Oh, Jesus. There were three or four?
Was it Julie Newmar, or was it Lee Merriweather, or was it Eartha Kitt?
Oh, damn it, Mo.
I kind of know who I would pick.
Dang it. You go, George. I don't know yet.
I kind of got to go with Eartha Kitt just because she's Eartha fucking Kitt. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Does that woman command everyone's attention no matter what she does?
Yeah.
But Julie Newmar is pretty amazing.
Julie Newmar was awesome. And Lee Merriweather was great.
I would lean toward Julie Newmar. And no disrespect to Lee Merriweather, but I mean, Julie Newmar, I think I saw her in the role more. That probably helped.
She was the first one that I saw, right? She was the first cast.
Yeah, she was. Yeah. But I mean, it changed throughout the series as they recast and other stuff. But all three great actresses in their own right. Eartha Kitt, especially, as you said, Eartha fucking Kitt. I mean, how do you get her? In the first place.
It's like if you had Aretha Franklin in that role, you'd just be like, it's Aretha Franklin. Like,
okay, just do your thing. Everybody will love you.
We're not even going to call the character Catwoman. It's just Eartha Catwoman now. That's it.
That's fine. Yeah. It'll work.
I just remember her like rolling the R's and stuff with the purring and stuff. I was like, oh, yeah.
Now, I enjoyed Eartha Kitt more when I was a teenager. I could tell you that because it was like, oh, there's something going on with Catwoman. It gives me a little tingle. What's going on with Catwoman now?
I think she kicked Halle Berry ass for sure.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. Oh, man. Ugh. We were just talking about, when we talked about the Ghostbusters, that backtrack a few weeks ago, how sometimes you end up casting someone because you didn't cast someone. It's just like a place filler that stays there.
Sure. Yeah. Slimer.
The narrator that we all know, you know, at the end of the episode, will this be curtains for Batman or what? That guy, you know?
Right.
That was William Dozier, the producer.
Oh, wow.
He couldn't find a voice he wanted. So he's like, I'll just do it. He was uncredited, but on the TV soundtrack, he's identified as, I love this, Desmond Doomsday.
That's a great name.
That should be a supervillain in and of itself, right there. But that was just the producer doing his thing.
His narrator kind of was a little bit of a villain because he scared the crap out of me as a kid every time. Because I was like, oh my God, is Batman going to die?
Impending doom, that voice.
Yeah. Yep. And we talk about the guest stars. Okay, how can you forget the climbing up the side of the building window scenes?
I didn't forget that. I told you that's one of my main impressions from watching it as a kid because I didn't know who 90% of those people were when I was a little kid. But they would just pop out of these windows and ask the dumbest things or say the stupidest lines. And I was like, why are they in the show? Why haven't somebody pulled them out of that building and dropped them on the pavement?
The craziest thing is that, so you know that thing was shot, the camera laying on its side, right? Sure, so absolutely. Batman and Robin were pulling a rope and walking. And these guys were peeking up out of the floor, not out of the side of a building for starters, right? What I read somewhere, and actually researching for this, is that it was often celebrities who wanted to be on the show, but there was no role for them. And so they said, we're going to make this recurring bit so you can be on the show.
That makes total sense because that's what it felt like, just a bit. It didn't feel like part of the story.
Yep.
But I thought it was really great how like some of the characters were in their TV personas. Like they weren't themselves. Like Ted Cassidy, he came out as Lurch.
Oh,
right. It was Lurch that stuck his head out. I remember it wasn't Ted Cassidy. So it's like, I guess that was a way of like cross advertising, I guess.
Sure.
This is what people knew you as.
Yeah. If they were other ABC shows. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Greenhorn and Kato popped out of the window.
Yeah. As
themselves, right?
Yeah. Like Bruce Lee was on Batman.
Before they guest starred on it.
Well, that just made Batman that much better.
So who else do you remember celebrities popping out of the windows?
Dick Clark.
Okay, Dick Clark. Jerry Lewis one time.
Yep. Wow.
Sammy Davis Jr.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Because that's like a laughing moment, like I was talking about.
It is. It's just like, absolutely.
Right?
Santa Claus popped out one time, I remember.
Sure, of course. Why not? Batman was probably saving Christmas or some shit.
Probably.
Probably unrelated. I don't know. Art Linkletter, I know. Even Edward G. Robinson, for heaven's sake. The biggest gangster actor ever. Batman and Robin, see?
Yeah. I just wonder what the Robin holy line was for Santa Claus. Like, holy ho ho ho, Batman!
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story,
personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at genxgrownup.com.
Fear not, America. They're still on duty, that legendary duo. Still humbly withholding their true identities under the guises of a noble flying rodent and a commonplace backyard bird.
To the Batmobile!
But what's this? That's no tricycle, citizen. Holy femininity.
Batgirl. Batgirl? Batgirl. Batgirl.
We all loved this show, but there was like so much like little trivia I found. I mean, we all found actually kind of doing our old Google Assistant thing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Google.
Yeah, thank you, Google. But one thing I didn't realize, because again, none of us saw this in primetime when it first aired. It was actually on twice a week, which actually makes sense in hindsight because the episodes were always like,
right.
Will he get free? Will he? Like every episode was like a two-parter pretty
much. They were always cliffhangers. Sure.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess it makes sense they would do that.
And you know, it also makes sense too, because that thing at the end, the bat time. Time bat channel thing.
Same bat channel.
But it always said tomorrow.
That's tomorrow.
Same
right,
bat time
right.
bat channel. So Wednesday, Thursday. Now I understand it.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. The interesting thing is when I watched it, it felt like a serial to me. Like every episode flowed into the next one. Mm-hmm. What I didn't realize until now, you look at the list of episodes. Only every other one ended in a cliffhanger because Wednesday was the first part and Thursday was the second part.
Yeah,
and then a new story would start. But when you watch it 5 days a week,
yeah.
You don't know that. Or you'd have one of them, a cliffhanger on Friday, and you're like, oh no, waiting till Monday to find out what happened, you know?
I have memories of watching one of the afternoon shows and it telling me same bat time, same bat channel tomorrow, and then the second part of it would not air right after it. And it would be the start of another story.
Oh, it'd be out of sequence. Like, they didn't air the middle.
And that would throw me off.
That's a travesty.
As a kid, and I was like,
what happened?
Well, he's still alive. Did this happen after that? Or was this before that? You know?
Was I in a coma? Did I miss an episode? What happened? We talked about those signature fight scenes.
Oh, yeah.
And what's the biggest thing in the fight scenes that you think about is those giant graphics.
Pow.
Yeah.
Biff. Zip. Yeah. That was a huge... I'd never seen anything like that before. That was straight out of, we said, comic strip and comic book kind of thing. They look like comic art.
Absolutely.
Just big explosions, big starbursts.
And they used them, too. I don't know if you noticed. They used them to cover up flubs.
Oh, really?
Oh, did they? That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because you can see those guys weren't stuntmen all the time.
Oh, actually punching or things like that.
Right, so they would make this big whiff because they couldn't hit the guy for real.
Right.
And they would make this whiff, and he would be so far away that if you see it without the Bow Biff Kapow thing on top of it, you can easily tell he's not even close to connect.
That makes sense.
I always thought of it as a way to accelerate pacing. Like these things kept popping out. It made it like a music video, make it fast paced so things were going quickly because these guys weren't moving quickly. They were just kind of walking around a room swinging at each other.
They weren't.
You know, throwing chairs. But of all of those animations or just stills that pop out or whatever they are,
they're like
Kapow
wipes.
Was the biggest one. 54 times Kapow was used.
Really?
I believe that.
Boff and Pow tied for 53, and 32 overlays were only used once. So just in case you cared. And they appeared 832 times. Thank you, Google, throughout the life of this series.
Somebody went through however many years this thing was on the air and counted each one of those.
So I was going to skip it, but since you mentioned it, a total of 1,120 exclamation points appeared on screen throughout the
That's serious trivia.
I didn't do that. My research myself. That was somebody that's absolutely too much time on their hands. But
yeah,
thank
definitely.
You for doing it.
That's like the guy who runs the Batman 66 museum out of his barn in Iowa.
Yeah. He has nothing else to do.
Those are nuggets he pulls out during the tour. You know, how many exclamation points? Anybody have a guess? Anybody?
One thing I didn't know is that currently, you know, Mr. Freeze, we've seen him in a bunch of Batman cartoons now and movies and
stuff.
Oh,
you mean Arnold.
Yeah, Arnold.
Chill out.
I didn't know that the original name was Mr. Zero and the TV series changed it to Mr. Freeze. Yep. And then that became it. That became canon from that point on.
Well, it didn't become canon until they moved it back into the comics. When it was on the TV show, comic fans didn't say it was canon. course, 66, I don't think canon was really a thing either.
But obviously, I was imagining they took it from that because it was after they started calling Mr. Freeze that the comic book started.
Yeah, DC was going into bankruptcy around this time period. That was the true. TV show was the most popular thing they had.
Wow.
So you're saying the comics reabsorbed things that happened in the show and made them real in the comics?
Yeah, so there you go.
I'm sure that's very common.
Go with a winner, huh? Wow. The thing I read that was most intriguing to me that, of course, because it's related to King Kong, but the Batcave set was built on the same spot where the Skull Island gate was in the old 33 King Kong. You know, like the big Jurassic Park King gates. Kong. Like the big gate. Yeah, the original King Kong.
Like, wow. But it was same inside spot. A studio, right?
Yeah, so it had been gone, but that's the same spot where they put the Batcave. Just some guy who had worked on King Kong and said, hey, you know where you have the Batcave? Coincidentally. And that gate, by the way, was burned down to simulate the burning of Atlanta for Gone with the Wind in 39. A lot of cinematic history. Yeah, the King Kong gate was burned. Yeah, and they used that because, of course, it wasn't a stone gate. It was actually lumber.
John is trying to turn this Batman backtrack into a King Kong backtrack. Next thing you know, we're going to be talking about Fay Wray and how it led into Donkey Kong.
Oh, I haven't
even done
my...
mentioned it, Donkey Kong was often related to Batman.
Yeah, I had my Godzilla reference I was going to throw in there, but I was going to skip it.
It's just, you have more restraint than I do.
Yeah,
back on focus, gentlemen. We're talking about Batman 66.
A lot of history. Okay, well, speaking of scenery, one of the things in the cinematography, when you see that scenery, you notice how sometimes when you see villains, the camera's crooked, like it's off.
Yeah,
it's
on an angle or something. The Riddler's was always on a diagonal.
Yes, whenever you saw that, it was known as oblique or Dutch in cinematography. And it was because the villains are crooked and it gave the sense of something being uncomfortable and out of alignment. And
it was effective.
Like a subliminal thing.
That's actually pretty sophisticated.
Yeah. Right, when you think about it. Well, now you watch it and it's a little too on the nose. Like you wouldn't see a modern film and you see the bad guy and the camera's always at a 10 degree tilt.
Well, maybe not, but you know, you're talking about 50 years between the two, so.
Of course, right.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like this visual hint. It's like how the bad guy in Westerns wears a black hat. It was one of those things. It was a hint to go, oh, something's off here. Something's wrong.
You know what it tells me, though, when you're talking about them using that sophisticated idea to convey the unease and stuff, and we talk about all the other things. It feels to me like the costume department on Batman 66 just wasn't up to snuff of the other departments. Because the costumes were awful.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of
patched
together.
I mean, half
the
time I expected his bat logo on his chest to like fall off of the
costume. To fall off. It looked like it was peeling off all the time, didn't it?
And the drawn on eyebrows on this cowl.
The drawn on eyebrows on the cowl. Oh my God. Silver pin or whatever that was.
Yeah, right.
The costumes now look glorious. When you look back at 66 Batman,
you're
like, oh, that's so awesomely bad. But at that time, as a kid, I was like, those costumes look crappy. I don't want one of those.
I think
Halloween.
I can make that.
Yeah.
I think I could do that.
I've got Batman pajamas that are better than this.
Underoos, of course. The underoos were, frankly, they were screen printed. At least they were real. The logo wasn't falling off.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
Holy Guadalcanal, Batman! What now?
What now? Why, everything's new as Batman and Robin battle crime with a battery of wonderful new Batnovations. The Batcopter, the Batboat, the Batcycle, and Flash, a late bulletin from... the Cape.
3, 2, 1.
The Bat Rocket blasting off. See the dynamic duo dangle from new heights of danger.
Careful, Robin. It's quite a drop.
All good things ultimately come to an end, and that's almost true of this backtrack. But first, we got to talk about the impact and legacy of this show. It only ran 3 years, but ultimately ended after 120 episodes.
Wow, that's a lot.
The last one airing March 14th, 1968.
Wow, 50 episodes.
Well, keep in mind, it was two a week.
Yeah, it was two a week, and the typical thing is 26 weeks or so is a typical series back then.
It's about right.
So 50 episodes, yeah, wow.
Is there like a number of episode threshold to be syndicated also? Because we talked about that before on something.
I think there is today. Yeah, but they had plenty. They had three seasons. True. And plus they had, it was like having six seasons because they had 120 episodes.
I don't know that that can be a real thing, John, because Next Generation had zero episodes and was immediately in syndication.
Well, now it's a thing where syndication happens. Yeah. Back then, it was just reruns.
Right.
Because who would you syndicate it to? There was only three networks. Who's going to syndicate it?
And PBS wasn't buying any of it.
Right. ABC was running old ABC crap. NBC was running old NBC crap. There was no syndication then. But we alluded to, of course, over the life of the show, Batman the movie that came out during that at the end of the first year. Remember, they were going to do a movie. So they did the film and they released it in July of 66. It was called Batman : the movie. Just like the show. Same. Yeah. It was the same thing.
But all the villains were in it, though, right? That was when all the villains were in it.
It did. It had the whole rogues gallery.
They all ganged up. They did.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was the one that had the Batcopter. Was that the one where the Batcopter
first
came in?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because remember, he's coming out of the water and there's a shark attached to his leg.
And the shark is hanging on it. And he's got the bat repellent.
Oh, my God.
The bat shark. The bat shark
repellent. The rubbery shark.
The shark repellent.
Bat shark repellent.
Where'd you keep it? Oh, it's in my belt. Utility belt. It fits in
there. How do bats develop some kind of secretion that repels sharks?
Hey.
Why is there bat shark repellent?
Hey, don't dig too deep in this, man.
Don't dig too deep.
Don't peel too many layers off the onion.
Oh, no, no. Don't go more than one layer deep. It's a very thin skin. We had mentioned that Batman had been around for 25 years or so before the TV show ever came out. It had a rich legacy and everything. Mm-hmm. But even in that time, there had been very little merchandise-wise. It was just another comic book. You know, and there was Superman stuff, but not so much Batman, which you said, George, was kind of like the runner-up in the DC world. But after Batman 66, buying Batman stuff, that was part of being a fan. There's so much. Thousands of products. And even today, the retail presence for bat shirts and bat tees and whatever.
Yeah, logos and
it's one of my wife's favorite t-shirts is her Batman t-shirt.
Yeah, I've seen her wear it. I know what you're saying, right? But now you go to a convention today, you know, and if you see, okay, let's say they have superhero logos. Number one is the Superman shield, right?
Right. Yes.
But number two, if you have those, you've got a Batman crest of some form. Yeah. It could be the old 66 oval. It could be the big spread wing from the movies or whatever. But Batman merch is absolutely everywhere, probably bigger than anything else.
It's odd because when you think about it in the context of the comic book world, Marvel is by far dominating DC right now as far as, you know, the movie. And everything that's out there for the general audience, not just the comic fans. But when you're talking about logos and symbols, there's no question. Superman's first.
Batman
second. Captain America might be a distant third.
Maybe. With the shield?
Yes, yeah, sure, with the shield.
Yeah. But let me tell you, though, I mean, I almost think Batman logo may be more popular now than Superman.
I think it's higher regarded than the Superman. Superman still sells more. It's just like, you know, Hulk Hogan in wrestling versus Ric Flair. Hulk Hogan's going to sell more. Ric Flair was by far the better wrestler, and the people who follow wrestling love Ric Flair quite a bit more than they do Hulk Hogan most.
Well, hold on. Now George is trying to turn this into a wrestling backtrack. You're getting on me for King
requests.
Kong now.
We've had wrestling requests.
Did that satisfy it? Are we done with wrestling now?
No, we're not done with wrestling.
So. No,
I've got like a whole series planned for individual territories and
oh
wrestlers.
Boy, good gracious. In a special wrestling miniseries. Yeah, it's coming.
Right. That's what we're
26
mean,
of them coming back. Out. Letters A through Z.
Yeah, but that logo, I mean, it's the bat signal. It's shining in the clouds. Mm-hmm. It's of course.
Well, think about the toys that you wanted when you were a kid. I'm going to ask you guys. I know the one that I wanted the most was the bat belt, the little tool belt thing. And I wanted
utility
stuff hanging
deal.
Off of it and everything. Yep. I never got one. But did you guys have a bat toy? I mean, besides the Batmobile, we all know that's number one on the list. But did you guys have
I had
any
a Batmobile
toys?
For sure. I had a die-cast Batmobile.
I did too.
I know.
Yeah. But never had anything else, really. other than t-shirts and stuff like that, but I never had like
I didn't get dressed up though. No.
I had the underoos. Why are you laughing? I had the Batman underoos.
Well, they were better than the damn show's costumes.
I just had the most bizarre image flash in my head right then, and I don't really want to talk about it, so let's move on.
Well, what I was thinking, I almost said you still have them, and then I thought better of it because I don't want to know if you still have them.
Exactly. I mean, I'll go put them on video right now.
No.
That's
so
okay,
moving
man.
Along.
Yeah.
We had talked about the show reverse influencing the comic books, but George, I think, didn't they do a series of comic books about the TV series later? Didn't they? They flipped the script.
There was a Batman 66 comic book series. Yeah, it was 2013, roughly, when it came out.
Fairly recent then. That's interesting.
It was a show based on the books, but this book was based on the show. And so all the artwork and all the way that they handled things inside the comic book was done as though it were the TV show. So you had all the graphics and the campy, holy Batman one-liner kind of stuff. Yeah.
Right.
You know, I've never seen it, but like, I don't want to buy a compendium and read every one, but I feel like I want to go to the digital comic book store and grab one and read
it. Just to see what it was like.
Just to see what it's like.
Yeah, because I've seen them do that with Star Trek Year 4 of the 5-year mission, because we got only 3 years of the show. They did that series. I know they did the $6 Million Man. They did a continuation of the series. They did like a year 5 or 6 or whatever to continue the series that has never ended.
Firefly?
I didn't know they did it with Batman. Yeah. That's right. Firefly, continuing the season. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had talked about the iconic William Dozier line, same bat time, same bat channel.
That's awesome.
Where have you not heard that? People use that all the time. I know that we used it in my family as just to say that we're going to do this again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, like, meet you back here, same bat time. Ah, ha, ha, you know. Yeah. And after a while, it wasn't even a joke. It was just meant tomorrow. You meant to do it again, you know?
Yeah. It's an iconic one-liner, just like the holy Batman whatever. You know?
Yep.
The other thing was like how the Batman 66 became, you wouldn't have Lego, because Lego, the Lego Batman series, that's also very tongue-in-cheek, very funny. Mm-hmm. They have the main character who plays it very serious. I think that's definitely a direct nod to that
TV
show.
Will Arnett.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, right.
And he plays it serious, very dark.
Yeah. It's funny that this is just around for 3 years, and it was such a different, campy, colorful look at Batman than what we'd seen in the comics before it. But it's become one of the, this is one of the flavors of Batman that absolutely everyone respects. You know, if you're going to have t-shirts, but we'll have a 66 t-shirt. It's going to be gray. It's going to have the little logo, right? You were talking about Lego, Mo. They did the Batman, like the cowl and the head and everything.
Right.
But they've done one for the 66, which is the bright blue with the freaking white eyebrows on it out of Lego. You know, it's one of the versions of Batman that absolutely, it has not faded. I'm sure there are other, you know, versions in comics and stuff, but they always include this one.
Every now and then I'll see a cosplayer at a convention with the Batman 66 costume as opposed to the Chris Nolan big muscled up armored Batman.
Actually, it's one of the few costumes us middle-aged guys can wear and get away with.
Right. We can do that. We can do Fat Thor. Real easy.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's it, pretty much.
Before we get out of talking about Batman 66, though, I know we've touched on so many things that were important to us or that we remember, but I want to ask each of you, what for you, out of the entire pantheon of, you know, Batman 66, what's the most memorable character or scene or episode that you think of when somebody says, Batman 66, what just absolutely jumps to mind for you? Mo, I see you laughing.
But I don't know why this stuck in my head so much, but I think it's because I was watching with my brother and we both did like one of these double takes and looked at each other. It's when Catwoman's trying to convince Batman to run away with him, with her. And he says, well, what about Robin? And she's like, we kill him. Who needs him with this holy this and holy that? And he's like, kill Robin? I mean, it was just, really, like, did she just say that?
Will Robin be killed?
Exactly. I was like, to hang out with Julie Newmar? Robin may go.
All right. Yeah. 50-50. Let me think
it
over.
Will a dynamic duo become a terrific trio? Find out next bat time.
I was like, did she just say that? Really? Just kill Robin?
You know, the one that always jumps to mind when I think of it that is the most Batman-y of all the Batman 66 stuff comes from the Batman movie. Mm-hmm. And that's when he's trying to get rid of the bomb.
Oh my God, yes.
So first, it's a cartoon bomb.
Yeah.
It's like a beach ball
right,
with a little cap on top and it's long fuse.
It's like a Wile E. Coyote bomb, right?
It is, right. Yeah, it might say TNT on the side. I don't know.
It probably does.
And he runs one way and there's nuns crossing the street. Can't go that way. And he runs the other way and there's like a lady with a baby carriage. And he runs the other way and there's freaking ducks crossing the road. Yeah. He will do no harm to anyone he cannot find. And I think he even says, there's nowhere to get rid of a bomb in this city or something.
He's like, yeah, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
You just can't get rid of a bomb. Right? Just a typical Batman
problem.
There's
nothing like an Adam West run down a street.
Oh my god,
that kind of duck walky kind right. of run. Oh,
do you remember
man.
That scene where they have to run someplace that's a mile away? He says, we only have 3 minutes. And he says, Batman, that'll be a world record. He says, superheroes are made to break world records.
Oh lord.
And they do the bat run to get there. It's ridiculous.
George, what about your most memorable whatever character scene, whatever?
Penguin Burgess yeah. Meredith to the way just the whole way his Burgess Meredith's great actor. Everybody knows him from the Rocky films. That's what yeah. most people oh, yeah. today probably love him yeah. from. But I think he really threw himself into that role the same way Frank Gorshin did with the Riddler. The other people, mm-hmm. like you said, Cesar Romero, you're not shaving my mustache. Nope. They didn't throw themselves into the character nearly as much as Burgess Meredith did with that Penguin. I think he really enjoyed playing that role. And now as an adult, I think what I remember makes me happy because I feel like he enjoyed doing that.
Mm. So you get to see him doing something you liked. But yeah. he was enjoying it at the same time. Yeah. So cool.
Oh, plus, wow. he did such a great job. He said he just does an amazing job in that role. I mean, you can't think of Penguin without thinking of his character.
Right. I can't. No. You can't think of any Penguin without thinking of him. I get it. Yep. Hey, we could keep talking about Batman 66 and all to go down rabbit holes, but I think we have a good overview. We have reminisced about it. I've had a great time spending here with you guys talking about it. And that's going to wrap it up for this Backtrack edition of the show. Hey, listener, don't worry. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another one. But next week, the regular edition of our show. Until then, I am John. George, man, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate you.
It's always fun, man.
Fourth listener, it's you we appreciate most of all. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody. No life, no fun.
Don't you know that you're a grown-up? Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washing shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Batman. But the other one he was in competition with, Lyle Wagner.
Lyle Wagner. I know the name.
Sounds familiar.
You know him if you...
Okay, you can't pull that out and not know the guy.
Because he said it like we should know who it is.
Well, I don't know what else he was. I thought you guys would know who he is.
I have no idea who he is.
I want to say cowboy TV shows.
Well, I'm just going with that because of Wagner. Sounds like a cowboy name.
Yeah, true.
Have we done a TV show before? I think we've just done movies, though.
Not a specific show,
just a TV show.
I don't know, but if we haven't, then that means we got to do Dukes of Hazzard at some point.
There's a whole bunch more to do. Oh, shit. Oh, my God. So much more to do. Okay, hit 5, 4, 3. We just fleshed out the next 4 years of Backtrack. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
I expected fully for you to do same bat time, same bat channel. How you did you not do
it.
That?
He did
I kept
at the top,
looking
though.
For places to plug it in. And then I kind of overdid it already. So,
in a world infatuated with comic fandom, comes a show to help us remember the talents that have inspired us.
Whoa, cut.
Oh, come on, it wasn't that bad.
It's a bit dramatic. Let's just tell them about the show, guys.
We are the Canned Air Podcast.
Join us weekly for a comedic trip through pop culture.
We also welcome some cool comic creators, as well as some of the voice and screen actors that helped shape your childhood.
Find us on cannedairpodcast.com and on the Evergreen Podcast Network.